You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
And welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. My name is Joe Thomas. I am the Echo's Everton correspondent. I'm joined by my colleagues Christopher Beasley and Paul Wheelock, and regular contributor, our stats man, Gav Buckland. We're only one place to start. Obviously, it's a big game at the weekend. They're all big games at the moment. We know that. A trip to Chelsea, wow. Stamford, not a happy hunting ground for the Blues over the past. Hopefully, Sean Dyche can change that. Chris, you were at Finch Farm yesterday for his pre-Chelsea press conference.
Yeah.
What was the gaffer like?
Well, he was his usual self. I didn't have quite as much the usual company alongside me there. Some of our national colleagues were still on their way back from Madrid, it would seem. So I got to possibly speak to him a little bit more than usual. So he was glad to see a friendly face there. He seems unconcerned by Everton's long wait for a victory at Stamford Bridge. And he was just answering a lot of questions generally, as people would have heard from the top table, about Everton's current predicament and what he's trying to do to turn around the fortunes. And what he said a lot in recent weeks is just this increasing of standards and consistency across the board. If you're setting yourselves higher standards and you're striving for greater consistency on a regular basis, the hope that in turn will bring results. And then there was the inevitable question on Dominic Calvert-Lewin, which will continue until he does return. And been a few whispers in recent times that Chelsea might just be the time when he does return. But if we're going by what the manager said on this occasion, doesn't look particularly promising for a player, of course, who celebrated his 26th birthday yesterday. Not that there's too much to celebrate the Blues right now, but I mean, I think it would be fantasy football if you're thinking Calvert-Lewin comes on and completes his birthday week with a winner at Stamford Bridge. But I don't know, stranger things have happened.
I always find it quite strange when we're reporters ask managers about long away records and records that been in place for a long time, and especially ones that predate them. And you know, we all know that Sean Dyche is barely 6 weeks into his Everton tenure. Gav, I mean, you're our stats man. Obviously, you can talk to us about how many times how many games Everton have played at Stamford Bridge since the last one there and all that. But just going behind the stats, I mean, do you really have any interest in what Sean Dyche thinks about Everton's unbeaten record at Stamford Bridge? Do you think he should when he's been asked those questions?
I don't think it's relevant, isn't it? It's a bit like saying, doing that last week about Everton having beaten Brentford in the top flight of Goodison since like 1986 or something. You know, anything. That's a dreadful record if they played every season. Obviously, we've only played them, I think, four times in that period of time. So, I mean, he's just nothing really to do with him. And I don't know how many of the players have being involved in those matches. I mean, I'd imagine it's only Seamus, I would imagine. Maybe Jordan, to a lesser degree, played in quite a few. So, play is just another ground, isn't it? I don't think they carry the weight of history with them. So I don't think it's relevant. And I think you always feel that's the one thing, being a manager, not only do you carry the burden on the playing side of, you know, the bringing, trying to get the best out of players who I've been fanning under the previous manager, but you're also bringing in the previous managers and assessed managers' poor record across several grounds as well. All of a sudden becomes your burden. Yeah. And it works both ways, of course. The other way is, He's not lost to Stamford Bridge since 1995. You know, Dice gets beat, then it's all his fault, then, isn't it? You know, we've had a great record and he's spoilt it. So, in many respects, you sort of, you know, we've got the worst of both worlds, really. But now, I think I didn't hear the full transcript, but quite right to bat off any questions like that. It's not his fault.
Absolutely. Paul, I mean, one of the main talking points for this press conference, as it has been for every pre-match and post-match press conference of Dyche's tenure, and a lot of Lampard's as well, was obviously over Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Doesn't look like he's going to be involved on Saturday. Any surprises there?
Not really. When the whispers was in Sky before the actual press conference began, saying that they hadn't pictured him in training. Obviously, they were there to interview Sean Dyche as well, probably before for the pre-match show on Saturday night. No, I think it's probably the days are gone at the moment where it's really hope more than expectation of getting Dom back fit, isn't it? He's clearly still not ready. And again, there's still a lot of football to be played this season. You've just got to hope that the 2 weeks after, you know, Chelsea on Saturday, before the Tottenham game on Monday, it's more than 2 weeks, isn't it? It's about 16 days in total. That gives him a better chance to be fit. But again, reading between the lines, it's clear that any kind of little niggle he may feel or something, he doesn't feel quite right the removing him from that situation. And it's a shame, and because, as we've said many times on this podcast, many Evertonians would have said that we would be a much better side with him up front. But I think now we've just got to continue as we have been doing, and when he gets back, great. If he doesn't, we're just going to have to continue with Mopai, Demarai Gray at the moment, and Ellis Sims.
Chris, Sean Dyche has been playing an interesting game, I think, with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, because he's been there for about 6 weeks, and yeah, it's been very, very rarely that he's ruled him out of games going into. We've almost ended up in a situation where a will he, won't he for each game. But obviously, with us now having gone, you know, 6 weeks since Arsenal and him not being involved, it's clear that the initial issues were probably a bit more serious, and then perhaps letting on after that Arsenal game, the win, the first game of Sean Dyche when Calvert-Lewin played an hour, of course. Having been there in the room with him yesterday, obviously Dyche was reluctant to kind of go into the setback. Like he is, like, he's difficult to pin down, anything like that. Doesn't want to give injury time frames, and clearly it's in his interest to be quite vague, and he tends to be a bit more so than Lampard was. But I mean, do you get the impression, there's two questions. This is one, do you think Calvert-Lewin's actually suffered a setback? And two, is there any fear that all of a sudden this has become less of, let's get him to the international break, then he can have the 16 days and hopefully get him back for the last 10? Is there any part of you that's now starting to fear whether this is actually even going to go beyond the international break, and anything that Everton get from him is a bonus now?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, how long's a piece of string, like you say, Joe? Sean Dyche is the way he is, and I imagine a lot of managers like this, but you say perhaps even more so than Frank Lampard, he's not giving you much away, and he's not going to be sort of tied down to any sort of commitments he can't keep or aren't in his mind or sort of in Everton's best interest to let that knowledge come out. And Calvert-Lewin hasn't been doing a lot of stuff with the group anyway, has he? I mean, I know there was those pictures from the week before when it was snowing and he was in amongst his teammates, but I think a lot of the time, I think he's been working on it his own anyway, hasn't he? But so I don't know whether this is a setback, as it were, or a retrograde step in terms of his fitness. What you would think if he went into the World Cup break nursing no fewer than 3 separate injuries, but we were told the latest problem was the hamstring, and if that is the case,
you certainly hope that would have cleared up long before the season finishes. But, you know, who knows? In lieu of any sort of medical detail, and we can understand why Everton are shouting to the rooftops, you know, if Calvert-Lewin isn't got any more serious issue than we're led to believe, that we just don't know. I would hope that he at least gets the chance to get back on the pitch at some point between now and the end of the season, and that he could actually stay fit there, because after that's the big thing, isn't it? Just getting him back out there and keeping him out there. So I really don't know. I would hope that, you know, it isn't something more serious than just recovering from this hamstring niggle, as Deitch has called it, he suffered since the Arsenal home game.
Gav, if the prognosis for Calvert-Lewin has gone from us expecting him to be back from Spurs onwards to simply hoping that he'll be back from Spurs onwards, what does that do for your thoughts on Everton's survival hopes going into the international break? Are you feeling less confident over the next 16 days, where, you know, after the Chelsea game, are you dropping off the scale quite considerably now that you're not sure if Calvert-Lewin's going to come back? Or actually, are you already kind of prepared and think that Deitch might be prepared for life without Calvert-Lewin for a little bit longer than perhaps we hoped for and maybe expected?
I think it's the latter, that far as Deitch's concerns. I think what he says publicly, what he thinks about, is the two completely different things. And I suspect, given, I mean, it was interesting to say his statement that he wasn't going to be in my plans for Chelsea anyway because of the international break. So that from that you would get that he's probably like 3 weeks there, more, you know, from last Saturday. I don't expect to see Calvert-Lewin a lot between now and the end of the season. Having said that, I think what we've shown under the last couple of games is we've got a system where Gray's playing a little up top, and we can get the midfield men in and around the penalty box if he pulls that wide. I think we've probably got a system there that suits the team. It's not ideal, but because we're losing some of Gray's threats off the bench, and I'm a little bit confident that we can find a solution between now and, you know, for the rest of the season. Based on that, really, and maybe Mopay up for support.
Right.
So I'm reasonably more confident now than what I was a fortnight ago, shall we say, about whether Calvert-Lewin's missing or not. I mean, ultimately as well, it doesn't matter, does it, Joe? You can't do anything about it. Dice can't do anything about it.
No, you know? Well, I mean, even more time than that, but no, you're right, and we can't do anything more about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument to say that you've got something that is working. There was sort of the last evidence of the last two games that's the case. Then, you know, would you want a half to Calvert-Lewin coming in any case? So it's an interesting one, but to me, I'm okay where we are at the moment, set up, certainly up top. And if you get the midfielders in around the goal, then I think that's a workable solution between now and the end of the season.
Paul, like Gav says there, it feels like Deitch has stumbled across in the last two games a workable solution where Everton can still be a threat going forward against reasonable Premier League sides. Obviously, you know, Brentford having a great season, Forest have been pulled back into the relegation zone now. What do you think this new way of attacking, Damari Gray up top, obviously looking to surround him with some of the centre midfielders, particularly Adelaide Decore. I mean, what are your hopes for that? How successful do you think that might be against almost the next tier up of Premier League opposition? Because, of course, it's one thing doing it against Forest. It's one thing for doing it for 45 minutes against Brentford. Everton's next set of games are Chelsea, Spurs, Manchester United. We know they've got Man City to play against again this season. They've got Newcastle to play against this season. You know, there's a significant number of matches against teams in the top half of the Premier League. Obviously, as those games come, the players will have more experience playing with this formula. I mean, do you think it's a formation, a tactic that can work against some of the better defensive outfits?
Well, to find out, aren't we? It's looking at our fixtures, to be honest. I think it's working, and I think the amount of goals we scored probably doesn't suggest how well it's working. First half against Brentford, first half against Villa. We've missed some chances, haven't we, particularly at home. Onana's one not going to put us two up. He's an absolute sitter. I know Decore scored at Forest, but was it against Leeds where he went 1-on-1 after Alice Sims played in?
Yes,
The midfielders are getting chances. Awobi had a chance in the box, didn't he, against against Brentford last time out. I think there's times in games where we're just not putting our chances away, really. And that's going to make it hard in the second half. Because as you say, if that's our starting a level with maybe Mopai to come off the bench, it's very hard to change things, really. Yeah. So even though, as Chris, you wrote after the game of the weekend, Sean Dyche loved 1-0 as well. Much preferred it to have been 2 or 3, which it could have been against the, you know, at half time against Brentford, when I thought they were pretty good in the second half, and they certainly had more options off the bench like most teams do. And we're going to find that massively, you know, in these next 3 games in particular. You know, you look at Chelsea, I know they're having this poor season by their standards, but the squad's incredible. Tottenham obviously got Richarlison on the bench most weeks, that Juma on the bench most weeks, and then United. But it's going to be tough, particularly these next 3 games. But I don't think Dyche can do much more with the bodies and players he's got. It's about making the system as good as it can be. And I was pretty impressed against Brentford first half, and I understood the reason in the second half why he dropped off. I think the one thing he will want is just a bit sharper finishing, because we are creating chances. So we're going to find out how that it's a tough end to the season for us anyway, isn't it? Things about being called heads now, because Chelsea away, Man United away, could be very, very difficult. And then Tottenham at home, we may come out of those 3 games with maybe not as many points as we would have wanted. But I think I've seen enough for the games against Fulham, even Newcastle at home, Leicester away, Bournemouth home, Wolves away. I've seen enough so far to suggest that we can score goals and potentially get good points out of those games, those kind of matches.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And all of a sudden, Crystal Palace at the back end of April looks big again, because they've been dragged into it as well. And now they're on the managerial hunt, which is another interesting one. Chris, one of the other main topics of conversation from the open section of Sean Dyche's press conference yesterday was that of Connor Cody. Now, obviously, there's a degree of uncertainty with us all as to where Dominic Calvert-Lewin fits into everything in the plans for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say now, with Keane having started against Brentford, that Keane has gone to first choice centre back and Cody has been dropped. I mean, what were your thoughts on Sean Dyche's comments towards that situation? He praised Cody's professionalism. I think everybody is well aware of that in the footballing world, and enough of those people have told us about it for us outside of that industry, directly in that industry, to be aware of it. But you know, be a blow to Cody, dropped from the England squad as well. He wasn't named in Gareth Southgate's team. Michael Keane, first choice, isn't he?
Yeah, it's some unprecedented territory for Connor Cody. Not for a long time has he been in this situation. I mean, those two issues go hand in hand in terms of the being dropped from the England squad. Obviously, he went to the World Cup. He was much more than a cheerleader, but I think he was a dependable figure who Gareth Southgate had around the squad, who he didn't end up calling upon in the end. But, you know, if he's not getting into an Everton team who were in the Premier League relegation zone until the weekend and are still very much in the relegation battle, if he can't get into the Everton team, well, he's probably not going to get into the England national team. I mean, Tarkowski and Keane are both England internationals as well, mate. You know, if they're in the team and Cody's not, well, surely by default they're ahead of him. But like I said, this is a position, Cody, I don't think since about the start of 2017, he's not been in this position. Played virtually every game for Wolves for 5 years. I think missed one because of coronavirus quarantining. And then just one at the start of this season when he was on the verge of being loaned out. Anyway, it was already surplus to requirement at Wolves, and Kevin Fellwell gone back in there to do a deal to bring him
to Everton very soon after that. So he's gone from being, you know, the first name in the team sheet, never misses a game. He's always available. I mean, of course, he's available now. He's just not being picked. So it could be a difficult position for Connor Cody, and what seemed like an absolute shoo-in earlier in the season, the fact that this loan deal would be turned into a permanent one at the end of the season. That was when Frank Lampard was manager. So no guarantees. Football can change a lot with a change in the manager, whereas things have gone the other way for Michael Keane. You know, he's gone from 30 or more Premier League games his first 5 years at Everton, and then just 22 minutes this season, ironically, at Brentford away as a substitute under Lampard, to be being first choice for the last three games, and then a clean sheet on his Goodison Park return. So interesting times for those two going in opposite directions. Yeah, there might be more changes between fluctuations and form, or if injuries and suspension hit between now and the end of the season. I suppose it's the one area where Everton have got a surface of options in centre-back. Yerry Mina can't get a look in either. I mean, it's just total opposite to the other end of the park where there's not enough attacking options. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it goes. And it shows you how quickly things can turn around in football.
One loan deal that we know or looks very unlikely to be made permanent, even though there's an option there, is that Dele Alli going to Besiktas. Yes. It looks like that is going to be an unhappy conclusion to his time there. He's going to be back on Merseyside. It's going to be another issue for Sean Dyche to deal with. And regardless as to whether or not Everton are in the Premier League or the Championship, it's going to be a complicated one. He's a player that obviously we know about the talent he's got. He led England in a way to a World Cup semi-final, played a star role in that tournament, Champions League final with Spurs. But we also know the story of what's happened since then and why he ends up at Besiktas via Everton. Gav, do you think, obviously, Dele Alli is going to come back to Everton? He's going to have a year on his contract. He's on significant wages. Going to be hard to remove from the books, you should think, given all that. He's got a £10 million trigger if he plays another seven games. Can you see any way back for Dele Alli under a new regime at Everton? Or do you think he's going to come back into probably another summer where Everton are looking for find opportunities elsewhere for him to maybe shoulder some of the financial burden?
I can see him playing another six games. I think it's a bit like the Connor Cody thing, isn't it, really? It's easy to talk about players like Cody. I'm not saying that the situation of Cody and Alli are similar, but obviously not. The huge differences between them. For lots of different reasons, but it's within both players' gifts, hasn't it, to ensure they're in the first team. I mean, Cody was poor before Christmas, before the World Cup race. He was poor afterwards, so you can't complain if he's being put on the bench and maybe not getting his, you know, get a contract in the summer from us. That's down to his own ineffectiveness. And the same with Alli, is it really, is that it's a player who's, for lots of reasons, has fallen off the edge of a cliff since Pochettino left Spurs, probably. So all of this really is in Alli's course, isn't it, really? And I can't see a way, a future for him at Everton. And even if he don't pay the £10 million fee, if it's because he doesn't play enough games, he's still on a few bob every week, isn't he? I don't know what his annual salary was, but be several million, wouldn't I? Would imagine, and the club's still got that burden as well, regardless of the £10 million fee. So I don't know. It's up to him, isn't it? Really, you know. I can't see him playing for Everton. I see another possible loan next season somewhere. But given this track record, David Allen's funeral, so who will want him? And what would be the deal regarding his wages? I'm not sure. Seems very difficult time ahead, really, first for Dele Alli.
There's a lot of, I mean, he's not the only one as well, because obviously alongside Dele Alli, also coming back in the summer, we anticipate will be Andre Gomes, who's not having a bad season at Lille, but also Jean-Philippe Gbamin, who's having a so-so season at Trabzonspor. I mean, between those two, just looking back at them, those two started the second game of the 2019 season. the 1-0 win over Watford that Bernard scored in Gomez and Cabana in the midfield. £50 million worth of summer signings there. Unfortunately, in fairness to both of them, injuries have had a significant role. But I mean, you can just imagine that we've already spoken a lot about how Frank Lampard's legacy was limited by the legacy of the decisions being made before at Everton. I think Sean Dyche is going to get a taste of that in the summer when all of a sudden these three players start walking into the dressing room and he realises that he's going to have to come to solutions for them as well, isn't he, Paul?
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing he wants to be taking on in the summer. Everton's recruitment has been rightly criticised over the years, but with each three of those players, I do have a degree of sympathy for the club. You know, Gomez was terrific when he was first on loan, and I think everyone was made up when the move was made permanent. Gbamin, we'll never know how good a player he could have become. He's been incredibly unfortunate by the injuries he's had. And even Dele Alli, you know, I certainly said to you guys, from my mates, I thought it was a gamble worth taking, because just remembering what a player he was for Spurs in England, I know probably the year to 18 months prior to joining Everton, it definitely slipped off the levels that he previously reached. But I still thought, given the fact that, yeah, he's a roaring success, Everton paid a 10 million, it may go up to 40 million, but there was no doubt he was a 40, 50, 60, 70 million player at Tottenham. But it's not worked out. And I think of the three, I think that will be the most difficult one to do, because I think, as you said, Joe, there, Gomez, it sounds having a decent enough season at Lille. Gbamin has had a couple of seasons out on loan now, so I'm sure he could get another move. With Dali, without knowing him personally, you can't cast these aspersions. But a player like that with the talent he had, for him to be getting banished from like the Besiktas squad at the moment, what has happened there, really? And I've got to be honest. I know in your piece that you've done today, Joe, that he did have some key contributions towards the back end of last season, obviously in the win over Palace and the cross through Richarlison goal against Leicester. You know, two results that effectively help keep the club in the Premier League. But I'm sure it was the Brentford game when he came on, and I'm kind of fairly reserved at matches, and I just remember losing my rag for a little bit, because I just didn't think he was putting the work rate in. I was shocked by the player he'd become when I seen him at Everton, and I could you could, and again, I know in your piece today again, Joe, Lampard, you've used some of the quotes that Lampard had said about him, and reading between the lines now, they speak volumes, don't they? He was basically saying, you know, he's not putting enough effort in training, or he's not consistent enough in training, unless he's having a bit of a road to Damascus kind of style, you know, thinking in his head now, God, what's happened to me? I've really got to go back to Everton and pick my career up. I just can't see it happening now for him. And it's a difficult one, because as Gav said, I'm sure he's on a lot of money given his reputation. Yeah, that's a tough one for Sean Dyche. I just hope we're in the Premier League to make those decisions, because if we're in the Championship, it becomes even harder, doesn't it?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Absolutely, absolutely. Unless, like, I mean, part of me wonders whether Daniel Levy might have made a mistake and only stipulated it was Premier League appearances and not Championship appearances, but I very, very much... I very much doubt that. Chris, I mean, with that one final thing on Dele Alli, it did become a bit of a theme at the back end of his Everton career, that, or before his loan move, that Lampard was kind of referencing his attitude in training, or the need to train and be professional a lot. One person, one manager that certainly isn't, obviously Lampard didn't buy into it himself, but there's no place for any of that in Sean Dyche's set up. Is he's not going to sanction anybody who he doesn't believe is given absolutely everything, if that is indeed what the issue is with Dele.
Yeah, I think the whole thing's a nightmare, and would have been whether Dyche had come in or not. I certainly wouldn't think he's Dyche's player. If he was at the same sort of levels that he was a few years ago, of course he'd be anyone's player. But it's really sad. People have said, well, I just don't... Some people think that he doesn't have the appetite for it anymore, but it can't be as simple as that. It can't be as straightforward as that. Yeah, given what he achieved, you can't sort of just fall off a cliff in those sort of levels of performance the way he has, because the problem isn't an ability one. That's the thing. He could go down the divisions. I think he, unfortunately, he'd still be struggling. Dele Alli has more than enough talent to be tearing it up in the Turkish league now if he wants that. If anyone could provide an answer, people who are in the inside of football, who've been professional people in football all their lives, if they can't find an answer, even like for ourselves, we're paid to talk about football, but we're still laymen at the end of the day. So if people within football can't find an answer, I think it's a very difficult solution. I just don't know where Dele Alli goes from there. Like you say, Daniel Levy is notoriously canny in these kind of deals. I don't think he's going to let it slip that, there's some sort of loophole in there that doesn't include the championship. But we don't want to go there. We don't want to consider this. But, if you've got that nightmare scenario that Everton are in the championship, I just can't see Dele Alli being a big part of those plans, even if that 10 million clause wasn't in there. So I just think it's a non-starter. But unfortunately, the big question is, how do you offload him? He's Everton's problem to offload now. And it's a great shame for all concerned.
Absolutely. Well, there's plenty of things for Sean Dyche to take a look at there. But obviously, those are issues which he doesn't even have to begin to think about really until the summer. Before then, we've got the whole attempt to survive in the Premier League first. Obviously, things look a lot better than they did following the win against Burnley. The table looks a little bit better. I mean, there were some fantastic results the other night for Everton, weren't they, Gav? I mean, I know it's concentrate on your own games, look after yourself, etc. But, I mean, I don't know about you, but when it got to stoppage time, I was sitting there looking at Brighton and Brentford saying, come on, lads, hold on. Were you doing the same?
I saw something on social media saying a good night for Everton, and I just thought they meant Liverpool get knocked out the Champions League. And somebody mentioned something, I can't remember, Solly March or something. I tell you, there's always known by his first name as well. He's one of the players with me. I thought, this is a bit odd. What's going on here? And then, so I checked the results, and as you say, so both Brentford, they've done us a few favours recently, and Brighton, both helped us. And yeah, this can change quite quickly, by the way. We've had a good run of fixtures in our favour. It can change in a short period of the time, horribly. And Dyche was asked about this yesterday. Was it seven of our last 10 games or something is against teams at the top half. We're not playing a lot of teams in the bottom half who are under threat. And he said he doesn't really care about that. That's quite right. You've just got to make your own, reality and make sure you get your own points on the board and worry about other people, about what they do. So, it was good to see. But ultimately, it's within our gift, isn't it? If we win five or six of our last, whatever it is, 11, 10, 12 games, then we're going to be okay, aren't we? But as we said,
five or six wins out of the last 11. I'll tell you that, Gav.
Yeah, that's it. I'd tell you what, the way it's got the ball, we could be in the Conference League next year with that. But it is. We have to be careful, don't we? Because we've got three tough games. And the thing is, I mean, you get all statty about this stuff, can't you? But if there's nine teams involved at any weekend, two of them teams are probably going to play each other. Yeah. Probably going to be two fixtures where they play each other. So if you get beat in your game, guaranteed that at least two of the teams at the bottom in your group are going to get points because they're playing another team in your group. So, and we've got three tough games coming up. And I know there's fixtures between the teams at the bottom against each other in the next 3 weeks. So they guarantee points at the bottom.
That's it.
And I said that last week. In 2 weeks, because it's international break. In 3 weeks' time, the table could look completely different if we don't get points in the next three matches. So, as I say, forget about what other people do. We've got to try and get our own bank of points.
Chris, I'm going to ask you this briefly because Sean Dyche is convinced that you're always on dates. Were you following those fixtures on Wednesday and Wednesday night?
Were you too busy?
I was on
tenterhooks, as I briefly went on to online to check them. Yeah, Gav's right though. The way it waxes and wanes, you know, we're not being negative here, but in given that the fixtures Everton do have come up, and as Gav points out, he's whereas I was probably more on it on Wednesday, Gav might be on it more on, for the next few weeks, pointing out that those teams at the bottom are playing each other. If that is the case, then so yeah, I've got to prepare, strap ourselves in for. And I not looking so good in a few weeks, but there's no reason why if Everton can't continue their general upturn and form that they can't keep that up over the piece. And I think, like I said in the last pod, I think it's better for Everton that there are now 9 teams involved in this rather than just like 4 or 5.
Just as an explainer for those who are listening, Chris Beasley's the best dressed man in the Liverpool Echo office. He's also the best dressed when he goes to Finch Farm, so his press conferences. Yeah. And Sean Dyche has already pointed this out and believes that it's normally because Chris might have somewhere better to be after he's been to Finch Farm.
Yeah. Ryan, shame we don't have the visual for this anymore. But, you know,
I can assure you right now that Chris Beasley is wearing a suit in his bedroom just whilst he's doing this.
Not looking like a
It looks more like a prison suit, not an air.
No, I look like I'm about to rob something in a cartoon. Yeah, no.
Paul, I don't want to labour this because obviously with Calvin Bale, everything have got to concentrate on themselves. But Patrick Vieira going, any surprise to you? Obviously, I think Crystal Palace now are in the relegation battle, aren't they?
Surprised on one hand because he did an absolutely terrific job last season because they were left with a shell of a squad, weren't they?
Right.
After Poncho left, I think he had 7 or 8 first team players. They got a lot of the old members of that squad left on free transfers. And some of the deals he did and some of the plays he's brought through have been fantastic. The centre-back and captain, Elise, I really enjoy watching. I've enjoyed watching Palace over these last couple of seasons. But then when you read the reasons behind his sacking today, it seemed a reluctant one from what Steve Parish said in his statement on the club website. But they'd gone 12 games without a win, 11 in the Premier League. And as Chris referenced then, there's 9 teams in there, you know, the 12th, is there 11th or 12th? 12th maybe, and 3 points above the bottom 3. And, you know, like every club in that scrap, you can't afford to go down given the finances are involved. So I know we've referenced this on the pod before and in pieces that you guys have done for the Echo, but it felt like Dyche has always triggered a bit of a chain reaction, hasn't it? You know, Everton kind of went first. And I'm pretty sure if Dyche was on the market now, I think Southampton would have looked to them. I think Leeds would have looked to them. And I think certainly Palace, who've been living with him in the past, I think he's been close to getting the Palace job in the past, would have looked to them. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. Shame, because I think Vieira did a good job, but it's just gone wrong recently. But who's out there now? You know, that's it. That's the interesting thing. You know, the fact that Leeds certainly didn't get the first choice, that they, even though I think they've got a pretty good manager, the guy who did well with Watford, and obviously Southampton from with a fairly inexperienced choice. It'd be quite interesting to see who Palace go for, but a bit like ourselves, Palace, they've got some really good players but they're lacking goals, and I think they could be in the mix with us and every other team until the end of the season.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Absolutely. Well, that's everything else. Now we'll turn attention to Chelsea. Obviously, myself and Chris are going down to Stamford Bridge on Saturday for that. Very lucky, of course, and hoping to bring back some points from London. Yeah. Chris, any changes would you make any changes on Saturday to the starting lineup from Brentford?
Short answer, no. I don't think there's much he can do. If there's an option there, if he talked about how in football chances can come along in different ways, and Ben Godfrey got a chance because Vitaly Mykolenko was ill, and now Vitaly's back fit again, came on as a substitute, didn't he, late on against Brentford. So there's an option there if he wanted it. Obviously, he did the revert into the centre-backs who we had before, but why is he going to do that after a clean sheet? So unless he's got some mad one up his sleeve, and Calvert-Lewin is fit and firing, and that you know, it's unlikely, it seems. So yeah, I'd say same again for me, and I think that'd be the right way to go. I mean, he spoke about how the Mardy Gray's been a bit different up front than, you know, what you would see as your typical Dyche centre forward. I had my piece about how Dyche told me, giving him license to thrill, as it were. He was treating him a bit different than his other centre forwards. We'd compared him to James Bond there, despite him being denied what would have been his 007th goal of the season against Brentford. But yeah, I'd go the same. I think that the 4-5-1 at Stamford Bridge is so it's a shame he doesn't have the opportunity to change it, because we're seeing off the bench there's not a lot more that he can sort of bring in to change things around. So I can't really see him going much different at Stamford Bridge.
No, going to trouble anybody for a score prediction now. Chris, I'll start with you. What are you going for?
Oh, okay, stick with me. I would be positive and say that although then I don't see them ending this streak without victories at Stamford Bridge, they have over this period managed to get quite a few draws there over the years, and you'd certainly take that, I would imagine. Yeah. Now, so it might not be one, it might make Everton last on match of the day again, maybe, but 0-0.
Gav?
I was interested to see before that 40% of Dyche's Premier League wins have been by 1-0. Only Tony Pulis has got a higher ratio of 1-0 wins as a Premier League manager. But I'm not going to go with that. I was just pointing that out, you know, for intelligence using future score forecaster. I'm going to go with 0-0. I can see us keeping a clean sheet tomorrow. And the only thing about tomorrow that I'm concerned about is it me or is the 5:30 kickoff of a Saturday just being a complete nutter graveyard for us over the years?
Oh, I don't know. We'll have to pick that one out in the stats.
I think about the thief's stock in London.
This season we've had what? We were 0-0 at Fulham. That was 5:30, wasn't it? The really bad defeat at home to Leicester, that 2-0 just before the World Cup break. That was 5:30, I think, wasn't it, on a Saturday?
Yeah. So I think I'm trying to think the last time we won a 5:30 under a crowd with a crowd, seeing away from was West Ham under Silva. And that was 4 years ago. So we've not got a great record of 5:30, but I'm gonna stick with the goalless draw.
Defeat at Tottenham was 5:30 on a Saturday as well. Paul, what are you going for?
Chelsea come into this game in pretty good form. I watched them against Dortmund and thought they were excellent. But I believe against Leeds and last of the victories they enjoyed over those, it wasn't completely one-sided. They don't score many goals. We're just looking on the table when Gav was speaking. Then they've actually only scored 7 more goals this season than Everton, which, wow, given the amount of money they've spent since the takeover, is absolutely remarkable. They don't concede many either. It's really hard, but I might go with Gav and Chris, and I might go with a 0-0. And like, I think same way that Southampton at United last weekend, obviously they were helped by the sending off of Casemiro. If we can get a point there, it'd be absolutely huge. You know, a win. Yeah. First time since what, 94, just after Joe Rowe took charge. Yeah, that'd be absolutely incredible if we can end that long run. But no, I'm quietly confident we might be able to get a point. So I think that'd be a fantastic result.
That's a clean sweep of 0-0 so far. There's a clean sweep of 1-0 last week. Never we got it right. So I feel like I'm almost committed to having to go for the same here. So I'll go with 0-0 as well, just in the hope that we can replicate our success from last week. So I'm going to go against my instincts and go, which I'm not going to tell you what they were. But I'm going to go 0-0 as well. And we'll see if the magic of the Royal Blue can continue for another week. That's been the Royal Blue Podcast, everybody. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back on Monday with all of our analysis and our review of what's happened at Stamford Bridge. Hopefully, we're all smiling, celebrating at least another point into the bank for Everton. Thanks very much for joining us.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.